we present Michael Pennington, Sorica Cusack, Emily Morgan, and Christopher Douglas in The Monk by Alan McLelland, based on the novel by Matthew Lewis. The Monk.
The Church of the Capuchins in Madrid is thronging with auditors.
Every corner is filling up.
Do not encourage the idea that the crowd is assembling either from motives of piety or a thirst for information.
In a city where superstition reigns with such despotic sway as in Madrid, to seek for true devotion would be fruitless.
Fruitless.
The women are here to show themselves.
The men to see the women.
Some are curious to hear an orator so celebrated. But for most, the sermon could be omitted altogether.
Holy Virgin, what a crowd. It's heat. Oh, at my age, surely somebody will be kind enough to give me... At least let me get to a seat.
Perhaps we should go home, Aunt. You know I'm terrified at such a crowd.
Let us see what all this is about first. Oh, surely somebody will be kind enough to accommodate us with a seat. Oh. Beg your pardon, Senor.
Oh, it is no matter, Senora.
My veil is a great snout. I uncover. Ah, there. That's better. But no better for seeing any free seats, I'm afraid. Well, as you can see, Senor, my poor niece is finding the heat excessive. Uncover your veil, child.
I never unveil in public, Aunt.
Oh, blessed Maria. Oh, here is a fuss and a bustle about a chit's face, Senor. Come, child, uncover this instant, for you know I cannot bear contradiction.
I know, Aunt, so in that case I will remove it.
Allow me, Senorita.
Oh, thank you, Senor.
There now, Antonia. Gracious, how pale you look. You must not stand about a moment longer. No, don't you agree, Senor?
Indeed I do, Senora. You must both take our places immediately.
Oh.
Is not that so,
Ah, yes, it is an honor, Senora.
An honor. Oh, you will remember this day in Madrid all your life, Antonia. Now, I will sit here next to the pillar so our companions may lean while I talk to them. Ah, now, this is better, don't you think? My niece is totally ignorant of the world, Senor. She has been brought up in an old castle in Murcia with no other society than her poor mother.
More bewitching than beautiful. The fair skin not entirely without freckles. The lips, a rosy freshness. The eyes, mild blue, not very large, but a heaven of sweetness set in a crystal, sparkling with the brilliance of diamonds.
You exaggerate, Aunt. My mother has much good sense, Senor.
Your mother has no more sense, good soul, than is necessary to carry the soup to her mouth. A mighty pretty piece of business she has made of her life, to be sure. After broiling and stewing in the Indies with her husband for 13 long years, he dies, and she returns to Spain without a house to hide her head. However, her father-in-law, on condition of never hearing more of her, assigned her a small pension and permitted her to live in an old castle which he possessed in Murcia.
So your niece will be returning to Murcia?
No, Senor, no. My sister's father-in-law being lately dead, the steward of his Murcian estates refuses to pay her pension any longer. So I have advised her to send Antonia to her late husband's brother here in Madrid with a petition. As you can see, the young girl has a good, pretty face. And might do much in the business with the young Marquis. Do you not agree?
Much indeed. What young man would not entertain such a petition? May I inquire his name?
The Marquis de la Cisterna.
Don Raymond. Oh, heavens, I know him well.
Oh.
He is one of the best of men. So, let me see. Yes, if your sister will permit me to be her advocate with him, I doubt not my being able to make a favorable report of her cause.
Oh, Senor, you will lay our whole family under the most signal obligations. I accept your offer with all possible gratitude. However, I suppose you should first meet with my sister.
An excellent arrangement. And who knows but I may have the opportunity of meeting Your lovely niece once more.
Now, do you hear that, child? The cavalier has made a most civil gesture towards you. And now that matter is in hand, senors. You must tell me why such a crowd is assembled today in this cathedral.
Can you possibly be ignorant that Father Ambrosio, abbot of this monastery, pronounces a sermon every Thursday? You will find Ambrosio's name on everyone's mouth. He is known as the man of holiness.
Ah, undoubtedly then he is a man of noble origin.
Well, that remains undecided, Senora.
Oh, heavens, how so?
Because, Senora, the late superior of the Capuchins found him, while yet an infant, at the abbey door. Some of the older monks claim that he was a present to them from the Holy Virgin.
Oh, the blessed saints preserve us.
Father Ambrosio never quits the monastery except on Thursdays. He is reported to be so strict an observer of chastity that he knows not in what consists the difference of man and woman. The common people, therefore, esteem him to be a saint.
Imagine! Now, did you hear that, Antonia?
Oh, does that make a saint, Aunt? Oh, bless me, then am I one?
Holy St. Barbara, what a question. These are not subjects for young women. You should not seem to remember that there is such a thing as a man in the world.
Such profusion of ringlets pouring below the waist.
Ah,
that arch smile. She reads my thoughts. She blushes.
You ought to imagine everybody to be of the same sex as yourself.
Bashful, dropping her eyes now and telling her beads. She appears scarcely 15.
My dear, I should not like to see you give people to understand that you know that a man has no breasts, no hips. And no.
And now, the signal has been given. And in a few moments, the abbot of the Capuchins, Father Ambrosio, will enter. Father Ambrosio, who at the age of 30, was chosen superior of the society 3 weeks ago. Until then, he had never been outside the abbey walls. Already, his sermons have fascinated and astonished Madrid. Father Ambrosio has entered by the side door. A man of noble port and commanding presence. Tall, uncommonly handsome, his large black eyes sparkling. Content. Yet, behind the tranquility, there is a hint of severity in his look that seems to inspire universal awe. He has come forward and is standing before the audience meekly, but he can scarcely hide his pleasure at the enormity of the assembly. And now he turns up to the altar to kneel in silent prayer. Such is the devout scene here every Thursday, where, in language clear and simple, the monk expatiates on the beauties of religion. And now, the Holy Father mounts the steps to the pulpit.
The abbot gives explanations of the abstruse parts of the sacred writings in the style that carries with it universal conviction. In a voice fraught with all the terrors of the tempest, he inveighs against the vices of humanity and describes the punishment reserved for them in a future state. Upon the words of the preacher, while his full voice swells into melody, transporting them to those happy regions which he paints to their imaginations in colors so brilliant and glowing. And now Ambrosio speaks of the excellence of an unsullied conscience, of the glorious prospect which eternity presents to the soul untainted with reproach. And now, Ambrosio descends from the pulpit, slowly, with his hands crossed devoutly.
All of a sudden, he pauses, and his rosary falls from his hand. The beads drop among the surrounding multitude.
The large grains of amber are seized eagerly and immediately divided amidst the spectators.
Whoever becomes possessed of one preserves it as a sacred relic.
Now Father Ambrosio pronounces his benediction and quits the church.
Wait for the crowd to disperse, for I do not want to lose every breath in my body after such threats of damnation. I do not like this Ambrosio in the least.
How can you say such a thing, Aunt? Humility dwells upon his every feature.
Dwells humility also in his heart? I never saw such a stern-looking mortal.
Oh, he is surely separated from this world. Oh, dearest Aunt, entreat my mother to choose this abbot for our confessor.
I will do no such thing. God bless us, when he spoke about sinners, he seemed as if he were ready to eat them. He almost terrified me out of my wits.
The crowd is nearly dissipated. Will you permit us to attend you home?
Oh, Senor, I would not suffer such a thing for the universe. If I came home attended by so gallant a cavalier, my sister is so scrupulous that I should never hear the end of it. But pray, cavaliers, may I not inquire your names?
I am Don Cristobal, the Conde de Osorio, and I am Lorenzo de Medina.
It is sufficient. We will meet again.
Then let it be soon, Signora. Tomorrow, perhaps. That is, if you would wish me to be of service to your sister.
Such an obliging offer, Don Lorenzo. I will acquaint my sister immediately and let you know the result with all expedition.
I am always to be found at the Medina Palace.
The Medina Palace? You may depend upon hearing from me. Come along, Antonia. You may renew your acquaintance with the senor tomorrow. Farewell, cavaliers. Now, you, Don Cristobal, must not look so downhearted. You may kiss my hand.
As I live and breathe. Senora!
Oh, your ardor shall not escape me, senor. Come, Antonia.
Antonia followed her aunt. When she reached the porch, she turned involuntarily and cast back her eyes towards Lorenzo. He bowed to her, she hastily returned the compliment, and withdrew.
Her aunt focused her squinting eyes on Cristobal and kissed her hand generously in waving to him.
Intrigue, intrigue. Now, Lorenzo, how will you repay me for having kissed the leathern paw of that confounded old witch, so you may feast your eyes on her niece?
My thanks, good friend.
I conclude the little Antonia has made some impression on you.
She is possessed of every quality requisite to make me happy in a wife. Young, lovely, gentle, sensible.
Sensible? Why, she said nothing but yes and no.
But yes and no in the right place.
The right lover's argument. Suppose we adjourn to the comedy.
It is out of my power. I only arrived last night at Madrid and have not yet had the opportunity of seeing my sister. Her convent is in this street.
Well, my knight of Etna, be sure to send for me if you wish me to pleasure the harridan aunt for you. At your service, senor.
Lorenzo threw himself upon a seat and abandoned himself to thoughts of Antonia. The religious gloom and the solitude nourished his disposition to delusions of his fancy, and sleep stole over him insensibly. Lorenzo, in his dreams, still fancied himself to be in the church of the Capuchins. The door opened, and the preacher, whom he had just admired, entered. The altar seemed decorated as for some distinguished feast and was surrounded by a brilliant company. Antonia stood arrayed in bridal white and blushed with all the charms of virgin modesty as Ambrosio drew near her.
And where is the bridegroom?
A youth appeared as from nowhere and threw himself at Antonia's feet.
Yes, yes, he is here, my destined bridegroom.
She hastened to throw herself into his arms. But before he had time to receive her,
a stone rushed between them. A gigantic monster, his eyes fierce and terrible, his mouth breathing out volumes of fire.
Antonia noticed the words pride, lust, inhumanity written on his forehead.
The monster clasped her in his arms and, springing with her upon the altar, tortured her with odious caresses.
Lorenzo flew to her succor, but ere he had time to reach her...
And the monster was plunged into a gulf.
Antonia, leaving her white robe in his possession, animated by supernatural powers, disengaged herself from the monster's embrace and darted upwards as wings of brilliant splendor spread from her arms, crying out, "Friend, we shall meet above."
It was now Lorenzo woke to find himself on the floor of the church. He rose, and as he prepared to bend his steps towards his sister's convent, he descried a man wrapped in a cloak, carefully looking about him, evidently anxious to conceal his business. Lorenzo waited in the shadows and watched the stranger reach the colossal statue of St. Francis, take a letter from under his cloak, hastily place it beneath the saint's right foot, then retire swiftly to conceal himself. Lorenzo's observations were interrupted by the arrival of his friend.
Ah, you still there, Lorenzo? Good. Now, let's find a place where we will not be seen.
I'll be here immediately. Who will be here?
Well, the old hen, all her pretty little chickens.
But, Cristobal, what is the meaning of such rapture?
The old prioress of St. Clair and her whole train of nuns are on their way here to confession. She brings her holy flock here after dusk to escape the gaze of impure eyes. In a few moments, we shall see some of the prettiest faces in Madrid.
Ah, excellent. I will be able to see the one for whom the letter has been left. What good fortune.
What are you saying? Oh, tell me later. Here they are. See, they're removing their veils.
Now you will see something. I promise you. Lorenzo watched the old prioress make a profound reverence as she passed the statue of St. Francis. The nuns followed her example. He was almost beginning to despair of seeing the mystery of the letter cleared up when, suddenly, one of the nuns dropped her rosary. She stooped to pick it up and at the same moment removed the letter from the base of the image.
You saw that? You saw her pick up the letter and hide it in her bosom?
Pretty little chicken, I thought. No doubt some passionate avowals, which you will read later.
And... I will kill him! That was my sister, Agnes.
Sister, my God! Then somebody must pay for our peeping
without delay.
And there he is, yonder. I watched him leave the letter.
Come quickly.
The stranger, noticing Lorenzo approaching, drew his hat over his eyes and hastily retreated towards the door.
Hold, senor.
Hold there.
Hold!
Oh, no, senor. What is this rudeness? Let me be.
What were the contents of the letter?
Letter?
No, senor. You cannot play the innocent with me. The letter you saw being picked up by one of the holy sisters. What was in that letter?
Well, what title do you dare to question...
Hold, fools, hold! Lorenzo de Medina, remember the consequences of shedding blood on consecrated ground.
Medina? Great God, Lorenzo! Have you quite forgotten me?
Raymond de Las Distanas, you here. So what is the meaning of all this? Why this correspondence with my sister Agnes? Explain yourself.
With all my heart. But this is no fit place. Accompany me and you shall know everything. If you have not already heard my story from your sister, I have much to relate that will astonish you.
Lorenzo was amazed to learn that while his mother was big with Agnes, she had been seized with a dangerous illness, and being unfortunately slave to the grossest superstition, had destined her child, if it be a female, to the service of St. Clair.
And he heard how Agnes, on her acquaintance with Raymond, had confessed her repugnance at the idea of seclusion.
And on acquaintance... Raymond vowed Agnes should be his wife.
And Agnes gladly accepted.
But her relations interrupted the attachment.
And banished her to the convent of St. Clair.
However, Raymond found a way of making visits to her.
When Lorenzo heard how his friend had succumbed to temptation of the flesh, he forgave him and welcomed him as a future brother-in-law. He then told of his own predicament in his account of his meeting with the lovely Antonia.
Raymond desired Lorenzo to acquaint Antonia and her mother that he would gladly give aid to their circumstances and happily acknowledge them as his relations.
Lorenzo was overjoyed and promised Raymond to accompany him on the morrow at midnight to supervise Agnes's escape and vowed he would ask the cardinal to annul her vows.
After the sermon in the cathedral, the abbot was no sooner alone than he gave free loose to the indulgence of his vanity. He cast his eyes upon a picture of the Virgin, which for 2 years had been the object of increasing wonder and adoration. Who but myself has passed the ordeal of youth, yet sees no single stain upon his conscience. Religion cannot boast Ambrosio's equal. Yet may I not still be tempted? Am I not a man whose nature is frail? Should I meet some lovely female, lovely as you, Madonna? Oh, if such a creature existed but for me, were I permitted to press with my lips the treasures of that snowy bosom, never was mortal form so perfect as this picture. A fool that I am. It is the painter's skill that I admire. It is the divinity that I adore. Fear not, Ambrosio. You are exempted from humanity's defects and defy all the arts of the spirits of darkness. Away, impure ideas. I will not suffer my admiration of this picture to hurry me.
Who is there?
It is only Rosario.
Oh, enter, my son.
Rosario was a young novice belonging to the monastery who in 3 months intended to make his profession. A sort of mystery enveloped this youth. No one had ever seen his face. He was continually muffled up in his cowl. Rosario was the only name by which he was known in the monastery. No one knew whence he came, and when questioned on the subject, he preserved a profound silence. Ambrosio loved him with all the affection of a father.
Pardon my intrusion, Father.
Ah, these flowers are for me?
So you will permit me to arrange them for you.
Your attentions charm me, my son. Though I did not see you in church this evening.
Yet I was present, Father. I am too grateful for your protection to lose an opportunity of witnessing your triumph.
I have little cause for triumph, alas. It was the saint spoke.
Never did I hear such eloquence. Say once.
Oh, when was that once?
When, upon the sudden indisposition of our late superior, you first consented to preach in the cathedral.
I knew you not at that time. That is more than 2 years ago.
True, Father. Would to God I had expired ere I beheld that day. What sufferings should I have escaped?
Sufferings? At your age, Rosario?
Aye, Father, sufferings, which form the torment and pleasure of my existence. Oh, God. Oh, God, how cruel is a life of fear, Father. Nothing has charms for me now but your friendship and your affection.
What are these sufferings? If it is in my power to relieve them...
It is in no one's power but yours. But I cannot tell you. You would hate me and drive me from you.
Enough, my son. You must tell me.
No, Father, I beg you, I must not. I dare not. The bell for Vespers, Father... Your benediction, and I will leave you.
Ambrosio was filled with surprise at the singularity of the youth's behavior. After Vespers, Ambrosio received the nuns of St. Clair and heard their confessions. For some time, everything went on as usual, till one of the nuns, as she rose from her knees, carelessly permitted a letter to fall from her bosom. The abbot, supposing it to have been written by one of her relations, picked it up. The paper being already open, his eye involuntarily read the first words.
All is ready for your escape, my dearest Agnes. At 12 tomorrow night, I shall expect to find you at the garden door.
So, Sister Agnes, what saved this?
Oh, Father, compassionate my youth, or I am lost. Conceal my frailty, and your lenity will bring back a soul to heaven.
What? Shall St. Clair's convent become a retreat for prostitutes?
Father, hear me a moment. Long before I took the veil, this man was on the point of becoming my lawful husband. The treachery of a relation separated us, and believing him lost to me, I threw myself into the convent from despair. But heaven be praised, accident united us again. We met nightly in the gardens, till once, in an unguarded moment, I violated my vows of chastity.
You defiled the sacred habit by your impurity?
Yes, Father. Have mercy on me, most reverend. Give me back my letter. Do not doom me to destruction.
But conceal your crime. No, daughter, but rather rescue you from perdition. Penance and mortification shall expiate your offense, and severity force you back to the paths of holiness. The prioress shall hear of this. Mother St. Agatha! Mother St. Agatha!
Cruel
release me!
You know what will happen to me! Murderer!
I will not hear you! Leave me!
Oh, Sister Agnes! What means this? Holy Father, forgive me. You know the strictness and regularity of my house.
None could fault you, Mother St. Agatha. And I know you will bring to bear the rigor of your laws for the salvation of this wretched child. This letter will instruct your conscience.
Oh. All is ready for your escape. Garden door at 12. Oh. Away with her! Away with her to the convent!
Curse you, man of God! Curse you, man of hard heart! You could have saved me! Where is the merit of your boasted virtue? Coward! You have fled from temptation, not opposed seduction. But your day of trial will arrive, and in that fateful moment you will solicit with terror the mercy of God. Think upon your cruelty. Think upon Agnes and despair of pardon. Remember me.
Away with her!
I have done my duty.
Think upon your cruelty. Think upon Agnes.
Ambrosio still did not feel perfectly satisfied by his reflections, and to dissipate the unpleasant idea which the scene with Agnes and the prioress had excited in him, he quit the chapel and descended into the abbey garden. The height of luxuriance, artfully arranged, a shelter of artificial wilderness. He bent his steps towards a rustic grotto. The seats of turf were placed on either side, and a natural cascade fell from the rock above. He was about to enter when he perceived it to be already occupied, extended on one of the seats in a melancholy posture. Nay, Rosario.
Happy were I could I bury myself forever in some impenetrable solitude.
A singular thought, Rosario.
Reverend Father.
Yes. You must not indulge this disposition, Rosario. Man was born for society. However little he may be attached to the world, he can never wholly forget it, or bear to be wholly forgotten by it.
You amaze me, Father. Suppose that circumstances condemned you to solitude. Would not the duties of religion communicate to your heart that calm?
No, I should deceive myself, did I fancy that they could. After consuming the day in study, Rosario, if I could express to you the joy which I feel at once more beholding a fellow creature, can you be blind to the happiness of your situation? Here, secluded from the world which you profess to hate, you remain in possession of the benefits of society, a society composed of the most estimable of mankind.
Oh, that I had never seen these abbey walls.
Had you never seen these abbey walls, you had never seen me.
You... would to God that I were never to see you more, and forget that I ever had.
Rosario, lay aside your fears and confide in me. If my aid or pity can alleviate your distress...
It can. Yours only can. How willingly would I declare my secret, but I fear... I fear...
Fear what, my son?
That you should abhor me.
Abhor you? Rosario, to give up your society would be to deprive myself of the greatest pleasure in my life. Tell me what afflicts you, and believe me while I solemnly swear...
Swear, then. Swear that whatever be my secret... You will not oblige me to quit the monastery till my novitiate shall expire.
Faithfully. And as I keep my promise to you, may Christ keep his to mankind.
Oh, Father.
Now, explain this mystery.
Then, Father, how I tremble. Revered Ambrosio, call up every latent spark of human weakness that may teach you compassion for mine. Listen to me with pity. Father, I am a woman.
If Ambrosio's surprise was great at this first avowal, upon hearing the second, it exceeded all bounds.
Father, I love you.
Ambrosio found himself incapable of pronouncing a syllable.
Be not afraid, Ambrosio. What I feel for you is love, not licentiousness. I sigh to possess your heart, not lust for the enjoyment of your person.
Enough. I cannot listen to...
Say! You cannot leave me! A few moments, I beg you. A few moments. so I may convince you that this holy retreat is not polluted by my presence.
A few moments only.
Oh, my thanks, Ambrosio. It is enough to tell you my name is Matilda. Matilda de Villanegas. My father died while I was still an infant and left me sole heiress. I was brought up under the care of an uncle. He taught me to look with adoration upon the pure and virtuous. And I have obeyed him only too well. One day, chance conducted me to the Cathedral of the Capuchins. It was then I first beheld you. I retired from the church, glowing with admiration. I had found a man whom I had sought till then in vain. At length, I resolved to assume this disguise. Oh, I was fortunate. I was received into the monastery and succeeded in gaining your esteem. I should have felt completely happy had not my quiet been disturbed by fear of detection. And now, not to leave the discovery of my sex to chance, I throw myself entirely on your mercy. Do not drive me to despair. Permit me to see you, converse with you, to adore you.
Ambrosio perceived not that his vanity was flattered, and that he felt a secret pleasure in reflecting that a young and seemingly lovely woman had for his sake abandoned the world. Still less did he perceive that his heart throbbed with desire while his hand was pressed gently by Matilda's ivory fingers. By degrees, he recovered from his confusion.
Can you really hope that I can ever reply to an affection?
No, Father, no. I do not expect to inspire you with a love like mine. I only wish for the liberty to be near you.
But Rosario, lady, the risk of your being discovered is too great, and I will not expose myself to so dangerous a temptation.
Temptation? Then forget, Father, that I am a woman, and temptation no longer exists. Learn to know me better, Ambrosio. Is it from me that you fear temptation? Think nobler of me. Think nobler of yourself. I am incapable of seducing you to error. And surely your virtue is too firm to be shaken by unwarranted desires. Ambrosio, dearest Ambrosio, remember your promise and let me stay. No,
impossible. Matilda, for your sake, I tremble for you, not for myself. Insensibly, your passions will gain a superiority over your reason. My duty obliges me to remove every shadow of hope. Matilda, you must leave tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Tomorrow, Ambrosio? You cannot mean it. You cannot be so cruel.
The laws of our order forbid you to stay. My vows would oblige me to declare your story.
No, 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 you must not listen to me.
I dare not.
One last word.
No. I have told you, you must leave tomorrow.
Then, barbarian, here is my last resource. See, Father, this poniard. I will never quit these walls alive.
Matilda!
You are determined, so am I. The moment you leave me, I plunge this into my heart.
Holy St. Francis, Matilda! Do you know that suicide is the greatest of crimes? That you destroy your soul?
I am your friend and your companion, or this poniard drinks my blood.
The friar's eyes followed the course of the dagger. She'd torn open her habit, and her bosom was half exposed. The weapon's point rested upon her left breast. And oh, that was such a breast. A sensation till then unknown filled Ambrosio's heart with a mixture of anxiety and delight. A raging fire shot through every limb.
Hold! Enchantress! I can resist no longer. Stay, then. Stay! Stay!
Ambrosio returned to his cell and threw himself upon his couch, distracted, irresolute, and confused.
Surely her love is as pure as she describes. Had she wished to gain my affections, not my esteem, she would not have concealed her charm so carefully. I have never seen her face, yet certainly that face must be lovely. And her person be beautiful, to judge by her, by what I have seen
A blush spread over his cheek. He returned to his bed and resigned himself to slumber.
During his sleep, Matilda stood before him, and his eyes again dwelt upon her naked breast. She threw her arms around his neck and loaded him with kisses.
He returned them, and as he clasped her passionately, the vision was dissolved.
And his dreams presented the image of his favorite Madonna.
As he offered up his vows to her, the figure seemed to beam on him.
With inexpressible sweetness.
He pressed his lips to hers, and the animated form
embraced him affectionately.
His senses were unable to support such delight, and he rioted in joy till then unknown, till he awoke, heated and unrefreshed, filled with confusion and shame. What reasons induced me to authorize Matilda's stay? I have been a slave to flattery, avarice, and self-love. I feel I am no proof against temptation.
Where is the merit of your boasted virtue?
Agnes. Agnes. Already I feel thy curse. The next morning, Lorenzo de Medina received a note from Leonella, Antonia's aunt.
I know not in what words to inform you how strange a reception my sister gave your kind wish to visit her, and she has absolutely forbidden me to let you know our abode. But my desire to behold once more the too amiable Don Cristobal will not permit my obeying her instructions. At 8 this evening you will be sure of finding us.
As he had already obtained assurance from his friend Raymond de las Tisternas that he would gladly acknowledge Antonia and her mother as his relatives, Lorenzo was eager to accept the invitation and hopeful that his concern might please the beautiful Antonia.
When he arrived, Antonia was seated by her embroidery frame.
Her mother, who was indisposed, reclined on the sofa. She was aware of Antonia's blushes.
Leonella greeted him. So, Senor, we are honored, I am sure. You are unaccompanied.
Ah, Senora, how grieved Don Cristobal will be at losing the opportunity of paying his respects.
I suspect you of falsehood, Senor.
Senora, I...
Never mind. What is your business here?
Well, on meeting your daughter and your sister in the cathedral on Thursday...
In the cathedral? I did not know of this particular.
Oh, well, yes, in the cathedral, in conversation, I discovered that a relative of yours is a particular friend of mine, Raymond de las Tisternas.
Heavens, my brother-in-law.
I have seen him since. He was amazed to hear you were at Madrid. And as it is not in his power to pay you a visit for the present, I asked his permission to assure you that he wishes to acknowledge you as his brother's widow, and hopes you will look upon me as a protector.
I will not spare my thanks to you for so generously interfering on my behalf, Signor. Rest assured that while I have breath in my body, Antonia will have her mother's love to protect her.
Then, I hope you will permit me to inquire after your health occasionally.
In respect for my brother-in-law, I will not refuse to receive you.
And in return, I promise not to abuse your goodness. Farewell, Signora.
Senorita?
Farewell, Signor. The cavalier is leaving, Antonia.
Farewell.
Well, this Lorenzo is a charming young man, Antonia. How long was he near you in the cathedral?
He did not quit me for a moment.
Indeed. And his eyes scarcely left you this evening. Why have you not mentioned his name to me? Of course, perhaps you judge him less favorably, think him disagreeable.
Oh, Mother, how could you possibly think so? Well, his manner so gentle, so manly. Well, if I did not speak of him, it was not that I thought of him less.
My sweet girl, I have read your emotions, and I perceive easily that your affection is returned. But what can be the consequences? You are poor and friendless, and Lorenzo is heir to the Duke of Medina Celi. His uncle never will consent to your union, nor, without his uncle's consent, will I. The next time I see you, Lorenzo, I will honestly tell him of the embarrassment which his presence occasions. This measure is necessary.
Antonia followed her example and vowed so frequently never more to think of Lorenzo that she thought of nothing else.
The following morning,
Father Ambrosio appeared at Matins and prayed without devotion. The service over, he descended into the garden. He doubted not but that Matilda would seek him there. He was not deceived.
Come. Sit by me, Matilda. Now, listen to me patiently. And believe me that I am not more influenced by my own interest than by yours. And you cannot feel more grieved than I do when I declare that we must never meet again.
Ambrosio!
Be calm, my friend. My Rosario. Still let me call you by that name so dear to me. Rosario, I feel myself incapable of treating you with indifference. Preserve me, Matilda, from losing the reward of 30 years of suffering. Preserve me from remorse. If you really value me, give me back my promise.
Cruel, cruel. You know too well I have no will but yours.
Then I was not deceived in you.
No. I will prove the truth of my affection. I will quit the monastery this very day.
Oh, Matilda!
But tell me, Father, shall I bear your good wishes? Will you sometimes think on me in my solitude?
Too often, I fear, for my repose.
Then I have no more to wish for, dear Ambrosio, my friend. And yet I would...
What, Matilda?
I would ask you to give me some token of your regard.
And what shall I give you?
Something. Anything. A rose. A rose from that bush will be sufficient. I will hide it in my bosom. And when I am dead, the nuns shall find it upon my heart. With it.
It shall be yours. A rose. Forevermore.
Oh, what is the matter? Answer me! For God's sake, what has happened?
Help! A serpent! Help me! I'm poisoned!
Father Pavlos, surgeon to the fraternity, hastened to the spot with several of the brothers and conveyed their superior back to his cell. By this time, the abbot's hand had swelled to an extraordinary size. Father Pavlos probed the wound. As he drew out the lancet, the point was tinged with a greenish hue. It is as I feared. There is no hope.
Merciful God, how long?
He cannot last 3 days.
Can no possible remedy be found?
Not without extracting the poison. And how to do so is still beyond man's knowledge. Come, come, come. The patient must not exhaust himself with company. Rosario shall attend. The Holy Father was still asleep when the monks returned to inquire. Father Pavlos loosened the bandage which concealed the wound. What was his astonishment at finding the inflammation had totally subsided.
God, a miracle!
He stirs.
Holy Father!
Blessed Father Ambrosio!
What means this, brothers? Oh, I'm weak. How is this?
Most reverend father, you must rest and not exhaust yourself by conversation. Brother Rosario will attend you. Come, brothers.
Yes, yes. Come, brothers.
You are still here, Matilda.
I am, Father.
That serpent was surely sent from heaven to punish
me. Father, I am appointed your nurse. You must not disobey my orders.
You are in spirits, Matilda.
And well may I be so. I have just received a pleasure unexampled in my whole life.
What pleasure?
A pleasure I must conceal from all, but most from you.
But most from me? How so, Matilda?
Shh, Father. Remember, you must not talk.
Ambrosio closed his eyes, and dreading the influence of her charms, offered up his prayers to St. Francis to assist him.
Now I may mix my breath with his. He cannot suspect me of deceit. But he
now how cruelly my situation has changed.
Oh, my Ambrosio. My saint. My idol. Yet 2 days and my heart will be unveiled to you.
Oh. I am disturbing him.
None sleep so profoundly as those who are determined not to wake. A tear had fallen on his cheek, communicating its warmth to his heart.
Matilda. Oh, my Matilda.
She darted at the sound, and the suddenness of her movement made her cowl fall back from her head.
He sank back upon his pillow, doubting whether the object before him was mortal or divine. What was his amazement at beholding the exact resemblance of his admired Madonna?
Matilda. The same beauty.
Yes, Ambrosio. My cowl has revealed my secret by accident. In Matilda de Villanegas, you see the original of your beloved Madonna.
How can this be?
Soon after I conceived my unfortunate passion for you, I caused my portrait to be drawn by a celebrated artist. Oh, the resemblance is striking, is it not?
Oh.
I then caused it to be sent to the Capuchin Abbey as if for sale. You purchased it. Oh, judge of my rapture when informed you had suspended it in your cell and gazed upon it with adoration. Father, the few hours of life which yet remain for me, may I not pass them in your presence?
Few hours of life? My brain's not wholly clear. Matilda, the consequences. Our separation is indispensable. We must part.
But not today, Father.
Don't press me too hard.
Oh, in pity, not today.
Oh, well, then, since you insist upon it, stay 2 days. Sufficient time to prepare the brethren for your departure. Stay yet 2 days, but on the third... Remember that on the third we must part forever.
You are right, Father. You are right. On the third day we must part forever. She caught his hand fiercely, pressed it to her lips, and fled from the room.
How can I authorize the presence of such a dangerous guest? Now, I must remember... Yes, my attachment to Rosario was pure. Now, surely to vanquish temptation is infinitely greater than to avoid it. St. Anthony was tempted by the devil who put every art into practice, whereas my danger proceeds from a mere mortal woman, fearful and modest. St. Anthony withstood all seductions of lust. Then why not I?
Vice is ever more dangerous when lurking behind a mask of virtue.
The void her absence would leave in my bosom. The monotony.
Ambrosio slept well, as lust-exciting visions floated before his eyes.
And Matilda lavished the most ardent caresses upon him.
He returned with his eagerly, and was already on the point of satisfying his desires.
Hasten, young Rosario! Hasten, Father!
Oh, Rosario, she... I was in a dream. What's this disturbance?
Don Rosario lies at the point of death. Earnestly request to see you, Father.
Great God. Where is Father Pablos?
Father Pablos can do nothing. Father Pablos suspects Father Rosario to be poisoned.
Oh, the unfortunate. Poisoned. It is then as I suspected. Perhaps it may yet be time to save her.
I cannot help you, Brother Rosario. If you will not drink this medicine I have prepared for you.
I have told you, Father, my disease is far beyond your skill. And I have no wish to be cured. Oh, Father Ambrosio, before we part forever. Father Pablos, yes. I have much to tell this holy man in private.
Yes, brethren. Yes, Father Pablos, I will see to him. Yes.
Imprudent woman. Has your own hand been the instrument of your destruction? Am I to lose you?
Yes, Father.
Oh, Matilda.
But I have sacrificed a pebble,
and save the diamond. I am poisoned. But no, Father, that this poison once circulated in your veins.
The same. In my veins?
While you slept, I kissed your wound and drew out the poison. The effect has been more sudden than I expected. Yet an hour, and I shall be in a better world.
Almighty God, you die to preserve Ambrosio. Is there no hope? Tell me you have still the means of life.
Yes, I have. The means of life are in my power.
Oh, then, Matilda.
No, I dare not. It is dangerous, dreadful. Unless it were permitted me to live for you.
Then live, Matilda, live. I consent to everything. Let us forget the distinctions of sex. Despise the world's prejudices and only consider each other as brother and friend. Live for me.
Ambrosio, it must not be. I have deceived both you and myself. Away with friendship, a cold, unfeeling word. I burn with love, with unutterable love. And love must be its return. I have but one alternative. I must enjoy you or die. No, no, do not leave me. Listen with pity. For in a few hours I am free from this disgraceful passion. Father, I beg you.
Please, wretched woman. What can I say? You know that I cannot, that I must not. But live, Matilda, live.
What? Live to become the agent of hell? To work the destruction of both you and myself. Oh, feel this heart, Father. This heart that you feel, Father, is yet the seat of honor, truth, and chastity. But should it beat tomorrow, it must fall prey to the blackest crimes.
Oh, Matilda.
Yes, so let me die while I yet deserve tears. Let me die. Fold it in your arms. I shall sink to sleep. Your hand shall close my eyes forever.
Matilda.
And your lips receive my dying breath. And will you not sometimes think of me? Will you not sometimes shed a tear in my tomb? Oh, yes. Yes, yes. So let this kiss be my assurance.
Matilda's Ambrosio. Forever.
Ambrosio still clasped in the embraces of Matilda. His only fear was that, as she was still under the influence of poison, death would rob him of his enjoyment.
Oh, Ambrosio, you have performed a miracle. You have made me feel that life is valuable.
Merciful God, what joy you bring me. How did I ever come to find such a glorious mistress?
And one with whom you may indulge your passion so safely.
I admit it. I admit it. But, my dearest, what do I mean to you?
One moment in this world in your arms is worth an age of punishment in the next.
Then live. If you have a power you have declared to me, use it. Any means to preserve your life, use it.
That would depend on you. If you would give me your sacred promise.
Anything, my joy.
Then swear. Swear on your solemn oath. Never to inquire by what means I shall preserve myself.
But should there be danger in
it? There is danger. Danger that the business might startle you and lower me in your opinion. So, do you now swear, Ambrosio?
I do. In the name of...
Enough!
I do.
Thank you, my beloved. Now, tell me,
Have you the key of the door which opens into the burying ground common to us and the Sisters of St. Clair?
No, I can easily procure it.
Do so. Then meet me at midnight. And that life is safe, Ambrosio, which I dedicate to your pleasure.
My beloved.
All day Ambrosio cursed the foolish vanity which had induced him to waste the bloom of his life, ignorant of the blessings of love with woman. At midnight, he hastened to Matilda's cell for the key of the cemetery, as required of him.
At midnight, Lorenzo and Raymond de las Cisternas, with a coach and four, reached the garden wall of the convent in expectation of Agnes.
Any second now, Lorenzo. She said midnight. She must have heard the clock.
Shh, we must be patient. This is no easy escape. The prioress prides herself that death is the only escape from her house.
But Agnes has many friends. Trusted friends. Else I could never have entered the garden for our secret meetings. She has no enemies to spy on her.
The prioress is enemy of all.
Listen. I thought I heard the gate.
The horse is champing, that was all.
She is late. But I remember now. The prioress herself examines every gate before retiring. At this moment, Agnes will be concealed in the shrubbery till the old devil has passed.
We shall soon hear if that is true.
Lorenzo, that was you.
Quiet, listen. Once more, my sister has known this since childhood. She will reply. No, she's not yet in the garden.
Dear God! Lorenzo! What must we do?
Cease this moan.
But what has happened?
Silence! I do not wish for a brother-in-law, one who cries in the dark. Compose yourself. All will be well. We will keep watch till dawn. Then, if she has not arrived, I will call on the cardinal in the day. He will arrange an order for her release, and I will deliver it. Alas, you will miss the old witch's temper when she reads it.
Oh, dear friend. I can never repay your goodness.
You can. My Antonia's mother will have none of me. So, mayhap the good lady's brother-in-law will assist her to accept me as a relative.
You young devil.
So, brother, we will await the dawn and enjoy our thoughts beyond it.
At this time, on receiving the key to the cemetery, Matilda took Ambrosio to the door leading to the subterraneous vaults, where the mouldering bodies of the votaries of St. Clair reposed. They were about to descend when they were startled to hear the noise of people below.
Ambrosio recognized the prioress with Mother Camilla and drew Matilda back.
Never did I witness a transaction more infamous than yours, Sister Agnes. Everything is prepared. Your fate will be decided tomorrow.
A curse on you, miserable wretch! Have I not confessed? Am I not absolved by God? A curse on you and the abbot who betrayed my trust.
Sister Agnes seems sensible of her fault, Reverend Mother. I deign to overlook this first transgression, and I offer myself as the pledge of her future conduct.
Overlook, Mother Camilla? After disgracing me in the presence of Father Ambrosio, Madrid's idol? Oh, no.
Then you must expect much opposition to your will. Agnes has many friends in the convent. Will you not consider her you?
Never. So cease your supplications and lead the way out.
Who is this Agnes who curses you?
An unfortunate sister who has committed the gravest sin of the flesh. Yes. Tomorrow I must use every means of obtaining a mitigation of her sentence.
No! Rather redouble your outward austerity, the better to conceal your own errors. She is not worthy to enjoy life's pleasures who has not wit enough to conceal them.
Abandon her.
Now, wait here, and as you value your life, do not follow me.
Ambrosio long
moment to penetrate this mystery, but his courage failed him. Near an hour had elapsed since Matilda descended, when suddenly it seemed that an earthquake rocked the ground. A bright column of light flashed along the caverns. A sweet, solemn music inspired delight and horror. Matilda ascended the steps. The most lively joy animated her beautiful features.
I have succeeded. I shall live, Ambrosio. Live for you. Oh, that I were permitted to share my power and raise you high above the level of your sex.
And what prevents you, Matilda?
Oh, you are still too much a monk, Ambrosio. Your mind is enslaved by the prejudice of education. You are unfit to be trusted with such a secret.
Oh, believe me, Matilda.
But the curiosity which I rejoice to see sparkling in your eyes makes me hope that one day you will deserve my confidence. Oh, till then, I must insist, my dearest Ambrosio, upon your keeping this oath. For though I forgave you for breaking your vows to heaven, I expect you to keep your vows to me.
The fire returned her embraces, which set his blood on fire. The luxurious and unbounded excesses of the former night were renewed, and they separated not till the bell rang for matins. Shame and remorse no longer tormented Ambrosio. Frequent repetitions made him familiar with sin. He was glutted with pleasure.
But Matilda was aware she had satiated her lover.
When the moment of passion was over, he sighed impatiently for variety.
Their illicit love continued.
Though Ambrosio gazed on every other female with more desire, he persisted in his resolution of never stirring out of the abbey till, one morning, the porter opened the door to admit two females to the abbey.
Father, I am threatened with the loss of my dearest, of almost my only friend, my excellent mother. Physicians despair of her life.
Moved by their entreaties, the porter escorted the women to the parlor and soon brought Father Ambrosio to them.
My child.
Your prayers, Holy Father. Deign to remember my mother in your prayers.
My heart goes out to you, my child. The hair. The bosom. It is my picture. My Madonna. I will prevail on the Almighty to spare her.
I have yet another favor to ask, Father.
The innocence of those eyes. How different from the wanton expression in Matilda's, aping the harlot. Disgusting. Tell me your favor, child.
My mother needs a confessor. Well, we understand that you never quit the abbey, so if you would have the goodness, Reverend Father, to name a proper person.
Gracious God, to sit for years listening to that gentle voice. But she is lost to me. By marriage, she cannot be mine, and to seduce such innocence, oh, it would be a crime.
Senorita, your petition will not go unheeded. But leave your address, and a confessor will call to you this evening.
Later, as the holy man paced his cell with a disordered air, a tear rolled down his cheek. She is lost to me. By marriage, Antonia cannot be mine. Then his eye fell upon the picture of his once admired Madonna. He tore it down with indignation from the wall and kicked upon it. My Madonna! My prostitute! Her address. My promise. A confessor for her mother. I have the key to the gate. At the time of siesta, the streets will be deserted. My head wrapped in a cowl. I will hear the confession, and after, swear the family to secrecy.
I am truly grateful that the worthy Ambrosio should break his resolution and journey here himself for my sake. Now all Madrid will frequently summon him upon insignificant occasions. Oh, no, for remember, Mother, we have promised to conceal the honor most carefully.
Oh, that is true, and we shall do.
Such an air of kindness, attention, and gentleness.
The hopes the holy abbot has given us of your recovery.
Oh, my dearest Antonia, that may not be God's will.
but such peace the Holy Father has given me in your future. He promises if I be called to heaven, he will seek safe refuge for you in a respectable convent.
Never!
Well, as a boarder only. So you may feel free to call upon his comfort and counsel at all times.
Such beneficence. Oh, you know, Mother, the common people say that he fell from heaven and was sent as a present to the Capuchins by the Virgin.
That was very kind of her. But if he fell from heaven, he must have had a terrible tumble.
Oh, dearest Mother, it delights me to see you in spirits. The moment he entered, I was sure the abbot's visit would do you good.
He vows to visit frequently. I wonder if it be God's will that I should be so singular in his condescension.
Ambrosio did visit her frequently. One evening, as he had not seen Antonia, he boldly sought her in her antechamber. Not finding her, he idly examined the book on her table.
Ah.
Holy Father.
Pardon my intrusion, Senorita. Your mother being almost perfectly restored to health, I left her earlier than usual.
Oh, Father, that my dearest mother should be restored to me. Oh, bless you.
I rejoice in your filial affection, Antonia. I'm glad to see you read your Bible, my child.
Oh, open it, Father, and you will observe my mother has copied it out with her own hand, so that I may delight and profit only in those passages which are of beauty and morality. Such is her fondness for me. Oh, my dearest mother, I am so happy.
God reward you, Antonia. Since you are capable of such fondness for a parent, what will you feel for a lover? Or perhaps, what do you feel for one? Forget my habit. Consider me only as a friend. And tell me, have you known what it is to love?
Oh, yes, undoubtedly. I have loved many people. Yeah,
but have you never seen the man whom you wish to be your husband?
Oh, no, indeed. That was an untruth, for every day Lorenzo's image grew more firmly impressed upon her.
You love Antonia, and yet would hide it from me.
Oh, Father, you amaze me. What is this love, and if I felt it, why should I conceal it from you?
Then, have you seen no man, Antonia, in whose presence you rejoiced? For whose absence you lamented? Have you not felt this, Antonia?
Certainly I have, the first time I saw you.
Me, Antonia? Me? Antonia, you felt these sentiments for me.
The moment I beheld you in the cathedral, it seemed as if I had known you always and had the right to your friendship and your protection. On my return, I wept and longed to see you again.
Can I believe my senses? Repeat it to me, my sweet girl. Tell me that you love me truly, tenderly.
I love you. Indeed I do. My mother accepted. The world holds no one more dear to me.
At this frank avowal, Ambrosio no longer possessed himself. Wild with desire, he clasped the blushing trembler in his arms. He fastened his lips greedily upon hers, sucked in her pure, delicious breath, violated with his bold hand the treasures of her bosom, and wound around him her soft, yielding limbs.
Oh, Father! Ambrosio, release me for God's sake! Oh, Mother! Father, Ambrosio tells me with such pleasure how well you are restored to health.
Elvira was too prudent to make her suspicions known.
Indeed, Senora. Your recovery truly amazes me.
I was greatly pleased to hear you say so this evening, Father. And now that I have such new strength in me, I will be able to attend my domestic affairs once more.
God be praised, Senora. So, I will leave you for this day, and I promise to return shortly.
No, Father. I will not hear of it.
It is but my duty, Senora.
I would not say so. It would be an injustice to deprive others of the benefits from your society and exhortation.
The Senora is most gracious, but...
But to be sure, I am now perfectly reestablished. And you may leave with the assurance of my eternal gratitude, Your Reverence.
Antonia could not help but feel relieved at his departure.
Elvira contented herself with warning her daughter to be on her guard should the abbot persist in his visits, and never to receive him but in company.
God, God, God!
How dare Antonia's mother banish me? This pleasure is part of me now I cannot be without. If it had not been for her mother, I should have been satisfied. Cost what may, I will possess Antonia. Antonia, Antonia, my dearest, you shall be mine. Mine. Damnation! Who can this be? Matilda, the last person I would see at such a moment. Heaven knows what fury may possess her if I refuse to admit her.
I am at prayers. Leave me a while.
Forgive me, Ambrosio, but I must not obey you for your own sake.
My own sake? What have you to say, Matilda?
Ambrosio, I know you can no longer give me your love. The port is mine, not yours. So why persist in shunning me? Oh, but you must know, Ambrosio, that your every step, your every action has been observed by me. You love Ambrosio.
Matilda.
Why conceal it from me? You love Antonia Dalfa. Oh, yes. I know every circumstance. Your attempt to enjoy her and your dismissal from the house. I know your despair. But, Ambrosio, I have come to point out the road to your success.
Success? Impossible.
To those who dare, nothing is impossible. Rely on me and you may yet be happy.
How can I be happy?
Listen, and do not interrupt me. My guardian was a man of uncommon learning in those acts which relate to the world of spirits. And he did not conceal his precious insight from me. He could reverse the order of nature, Ambrosio.
Oh, yes,
like you. I shuddered at the thoughts of magic. However, I have had recourse to it. To preserve our lives.
That night in the sepulchre.
Yes. Imagine my joy when I discovered that instead of selling my soul, I had purchased a demon, a slave obedient to my orders.
Rash, Matilda. You doomed yourself to endless perdition. No!
Ridiculous prejudices! Leave terrors for common men, Ambrosio, and dare to be happy.
I will not ally myself with God's enemy. Antonia shall be mine, but by human means.
Then yours she never will be. Her mother has banished you her presence and guarded her against your design. And more, Ambrosio, Antonia loves another. Don Lorenzo, who in time intends to claim
no.
Yes, Ambrosio. You must know that I have recourse to invisible servants. They watch every action. My only comfort in my loss, Ambrosio, is that I am constantly with you in some degree, thanks to this precious gift, this talisman. See, here, a mirror of polished metal. If I make a sign upon it thus, and pronounce the name of the person on whom your thoughts are bent, she will appear in it.
Incredible. You're amusing yourself with me.
Then let your own eyes be the judge. Hold the mirror, and I will pronounce. Antonia Dalfa. Antonia Dalfa. Antonia Dalfa. Now, what do you see, Ambrosio? Your mistress?
Antonia. My Antonia.
How does she?
She's disrobing. To bathe herself. She throws off the last garment and advances to the bath. Alone, and yet such modesty. She hesitates to put her foot into the water. And a linnet has flown towards her. She smiles and tries to stave off the bird, but no, it stays and nestles its head between her breasts. And wantonly nibbles them. I yield. I yield, Matilda. Do what you will.
Then follow me to the sepulchre and witness the effects of your resolve.
God's help, and I forfeited all claim to his protection. I'm lost. Yet what if I be rewarded for my daring? And if my reward should be Antonia? As Matilda has observed, I shall have sufficient time for repentance. Besides, I've employed her assistance, not a demon's. Unless I sign a formal act in my blood renouncing my claim to salvation, Satan will have no power over me. Then, Ambrosio, do not sign any such act.
God! Oh, God! No hope! No succor!
All is ready, Ambrosio. Follow me. Stay silent and cease your trembling. As Matilda led Ambrosio to a spacious cavern, the beams of her lamp displayed skulls, bones, graves, and images whose eyes glared on them with horror and suspense. Then, placing her lamp upon the ground, she began her ceremonies.
At intervals, Ambrosio saw her take various articles from her basket. He particularly observed three human fingers and an Agnes Dei, which she broke in pieces and
threw them all into flames which had sprung up before her. They were instantly consumed.
The monk turned his gaze to her with anxious curiosity.
Ah! Look! Look! It is me!
Ambrosio gasped with delight and wonder as he beheld a figure more beautiful than Fancy's pencil ever made.
A youth, scarce 18, the perfection of his face and form unrivaled, shining with dazzling glory. He was completely naked.
Matilda addressed herself to the demon.
In a language unintelligible to the monk.
The demon frequently darted upon Ambrosio angry glances.
The friar's heart sank within him.
Matilda seemed to insist on something,
which the demon was unwilling to grant.
Matilda threatened him with vengeance, and her menaces had the desired effect.
The spirit sank upon his knees and submissively presented Matilda with a branch of silver myrtle.
Then a thick cloud spread itself over the apparition. I have succeeded, but he has bound me never again to wake his agency in your favor unless you pay the established price. Hence, in this one instance, I offer you the means of enjoying your mistress.
Oh, Matilda, my closest friend.
Do you then receive this constellated myrtle?
I do.
Then, at midnight, Ambrosio, bear this in your hand and every door will fly open to you. When you procure access to Antonia's chamber, breathe thrice upon the branch, pronounce over it her name, and place it upon her pillow. A death-like slumber will immediately seize upon her and hold her till break of morning, so you may satisfy your desires in secret.
By daylight, I'm gone.
Yes, your satisfaction ends. Antonia will awake to perceive her dishonor, but in ignorance of her ravisher. Do I now convince you that my friendship is pure?
Beyond all doubt.
Be happy then, my Ambrosio.
As Matilda had predicted, the myrtle presented Ambrosio with a free passage to Antonia's chamber. Such enchanting innocence. The heat of the weather, no doubt, has obliged her to throw off part of the bedclothes. So, why should I not? There now. Let me see you. Such sweet modesty in your nakedness, my dearest. Yes. This is your Ambrosio, my beloved. Oh, you smile. Then, let me join my lips to yours, that I may draw the fragrance of your breath. this morning. My dearest, you shall not suffer this sweet agony one instant longer. Be patient, my dearest. In a moment, your Ambrosio shall come to you, and you will be his. There. Now, my beloved. Oh, how I have longed for this moment.
God. Holy Father, am I not deceived?
Signora, if you would but keep your silence, I'll promise...
My silence would be criminal. I will unmask you, villain, and convince the church what a viper she cherishes in her bosom. Antonia? Antonia? She is insensible. This sleep is not natural. Help! Help!
No.
Help!
Yeah, but hear me for one moment, lady.
My waiting lady shall witness your guilt. Help!
God have mercy. I beg you, spare me the shame, and I promise Antonia shall be secure for me in the future.
I will secure her. All Madrid will secure her. Leave your garments. You do not quit this room without witnesses.
Foolish woman. I did not violate your daughter, but think of her. That witness bring not shame upon her.
Hypocrite. You fly me from this room.
Cease, I warn you.
Ma'am. Tell me.
Cease, I say.
When you solicit with terror the mercy of God, in that fearful moment, think upon your cruelty. Think upon Agnes and despair of pardon.
You need say no more, Ambrosio. You are not so much to blame as you consider yourself. Nature avails to everyone the rights of self-preservation.
But she is dead.
So be it. Remember, I was witness by my mirror here.
Antonia, her days may be numbered.
Nobody dies of mere grief, Ambrosio.
I may never see her again.
Never with assistance from the infernal powers unless you yield to them.
I have told you, I will not.
It must be your business, Ambrosio, to see that Antonia, within 3 days, is dead.
Never.
Dead to the world, Ambrosio, but lives for you.
How, Matilda, how?
Do as I say. You have no time to lose, for Lorenzo de Medina, yet ignorant that you have murdered her mother, prepares to claim Antonia for his bride. In a few days, she will be moved to the palace of his friend and her relative, Raymond de la Cisterna.
His bride she shall never be. What must I do?
Hasten then to the convent and find yourself in the laboratory. There is a closet at the lower end. Upon the third shelf, on the left, a bottle stands by itself, filled with a greenish liquor. It is a temple poison, which the prioress reserves for secret use. Fill yourself a small phial. Administer the contents to Antonia, and she is yours.
Mine. Mine. My own.
Upon the third shelf, on the left, a bottle stands by itself.
The abbot soon found opportunity to visit the laboratory. His visit was treated with as much respect as had he been Pope, and he retired from the convent well pleased, leaving the nuns delighted.
As Flora, the serving maid, admitted the abbot to her mistress's chamber, she remembered that Antonia's mother had told her never to permit him to enter. So Flora now resolved to render any plot against her lady's honor fruitless. The physician would have my lady see none but me, senor. Till the convulsions are still.
I am here for that purpose. So you may leave your mistress in God's good hands, senorita.
A few moments, then, that you may pronounce a holy blessing, and I will return to administer to her.
Antonia, God be with you, my child. All will be well soon with you. See, child, Father Ambrosio is here to give you his blessing.
to me.
Dear child.
She tells me I have but 3 days to live. My poor mother's ghost.
Oh, what fallacy. You can be deceived by overheated fancies. The gloom of the night. A book you have been reading.
Ambrosio continued to advise and comfort her and succeeded in dropping the fatal liquor in her medicine.
Holy Father, I must obey the physician and send you
hence. Yes, I will take my leave this instant.
Oh, Holy Father, will you come tomorrow?
I will tomorrow. In the morning, I will see you.
Flora gave the medicine to her mistress.
By nightfall, Antonio expired. Without a groan.
In the morning, far different concerns employed Ambrosio.
I will send Father Pavlos to you without delay. He will be the man who will discover the demise.
Flora gave way to unbridled sorrow.
Peace be unto you. God will reward all who deny his presence in this house.
Father Pavlos was summoned in haste by Father Ambrosio to command the burial. He was instructed to obtain permission from the prioress that the corpse should be deposited in no other place than St. Clair's sepulchre, and next morning, every proper and needful ceremony being performed, the poor lady's body was committed to the tomb.
Lorenzo carried a letter to the convent enclosing permission from the cardinal that Agnes should be released from her vows and restored to her relations.
The prioress received the paper with an air of humility. But no sooner had she read the contents than a deep crimson spread itself over her face.
To know your sister's wish of quitting our society is a sufficient reason for me to rejoice at her absence. For judge our horror when she was taken ill in strange circumstances and delivered of a stillborn child, who she immediately followed to the grave. So farewell, senor. I fear that even a bull from the Pope will not procure your sister's resurrection.
Judging her looks, Lorenzo did not believe the unfeeling prioress, and he determined to procure intelligence of Agnes from her friends within the convent. He also determined to find means to pay his devotions to the lovely Antonia. Through careful means, Lorenzo let it be known to friends of Agnes within the convent that he would have the truth of his sister's disappearance. And he received a letter from Mother Camilla.
Procure an order instantly from the Cardinal Duke for seizing my person and that of the prioress on Friday, the night of the festival of St. Clair. I have that to say to the people will freeze your blood with horror. I will charge her with the death of your dear sister, Agnes.
And now here at the festival of St. Clair, a machine fashioned like a throne, rich with jewels and dazzling with light. It rolls onwards upon concealed wheels, guided by lovely children dressed as seraphim.
Reclining on a summit covered with silver clouds is the most beautiful form that eyes ever witnessed, a damsel representing St. Clair. Her dress is of inestimable price, and round her head a wreath of diamonds forms an artificial glory.
Who is she? Celebrated beauty, Virginia de Villafranca, from the richest family in Spain. It is said she is a relation of the prioress.
She's taken the diamond in place of the veil.
And now, here is the prioress herself. She moves slowly, with a devout and sanctified air, her eyes raised to heaven, hiding her secret pride at the display of pomp and opulence of her convent. She passes along, serenely. And?
What is this? The band of archers is pushing for the crowd and they've seized the prioress. And now, yes, they have secured Mother Camilla.
The prioress calls for assistance from the crowd, but the head of the archers commands them to forbear.
The head of the archers has said something to the Holy Mother and is pointing to Mother Camilla. The prioress is clasping her hands together with a frantic air.
Ah! Great God, I am betrayed!
Not betrayed, villainess, but discovered! People! I commit myself freely to custody and charge the prioress with the murder of our sister Agnes.
I stake my life for the justice of my accusation.
To the dungeon with her!
Murderers!
They laid the holy lady with mud and filth and stones.
She's been struck upon the temple.
Then sinks to the ground, bathed in blood.
Stay! The miserable wretch, he's dead!
Lorenzo, shocked at having been the cause, however innocent, of this frightful disturbance, feared for the safety of the convent.
For your sake, my little beauty, for your sake have I sold myself to eternal tortures. But now the produce of my guilt will at least be mine. Oh, I must restrain myself while you are yet insensible. My lust is increased through difficulties, the difficulties which have opposed my satisfying it. So, wake soon, my beloved. Let me feel. There, your heart, it throbs. Oh, such absurd brute warmth. Your blood flows swifter, and the warmth returns to your bosom. I am with you.
I have a fear of that.
Then let that be all. You fear not me, who adores you. What matters where we are? This gloom is the friendly night of mystery, which our maker spreads over our delights. This sepulchre seems to me love's bower.
No, do not look on me. Your flaming eyes terrify me.
My sweet girl. Soon your veins shall glow with a fire which circles in mine, and my transports shall be doubled by your sharing them. While he spoke, Ambrosio permitted himself the most indecent liberties.
Antonia's ignorance was not proof against the freedom of his behavior.
Unhand me, father!
Compose yourself, woman. Society's forever lost to you. You are absolutely in my power, my lovely girl, my adorable.
Leave me!
This struggling is childish. Neither heaven nor earth shall save you. So yield, yield, my lovely girl. Your arms round me, like this, fondling round me, and your lips close to mine. Can I leave you for another's enjoyment? No. Never. Never. I swear by this. And this.
Lorenzo, alarmed at the threatening mob, stricken by the fate of his sister, livened by the notion of release from banishment from Antonia, confused by his images of Virginia, the reclining leader of the festival, was filled with desire to succor mankind and devoted himself to the business of shelter for the fleeing nuns. In so doing, he met with Virginia in the caverns.
Oh, you are brave, Signor. Without your aid, we should have been lost.
Yes.
Lost in the flames. Trampled to death, stoned, ravished, murdered. You have done me a great service, Signor. My late aunt, the prioress, had thoughts of the veil for me, but now I have seen such wickedness. I am saved, thank God. And so my most fond thanks, Signor.
Oh,
bless us and spare us. What noise is that? God preserve us. Let us leave this place, Signor. There it is. A ghost.
Ridiculous. Cease your apprehensions. Someone is in distress. Signora, I charge you, care for the sisters till I return.
As you will, Signor. Sisters, let us pray for the Signor's safekeeping.
Lorenzo felt his way along the walls of the passages till he descried a spark of light. He approached and found a pale, emaciated, wretched creature, half naked, convulsed and shivering, stretched on a loathsome bed of straw. One arm lay listlessly, the other was wrapped round a small bundle.
Oh, no one comes. They have forgotten me. They will come no more.
Who? Who will come?
Oh, I shall soon be colder than my baby here. How a few days have changed my child. See, it would have been so lovely. So like him.
Your child is... Oh, God, how long... How long have you been here?
Who are you? Are you my sufferer?
You mistake me. I come to aid you.
Almighty God! Is it possible? Is this another illusion? Your face, those features, it is.
You unfortunate creature. This is the devil's work. How can it be?
Lorenzo lowered the lantern to see her face.
Merciful God, it is Agnes. Oh, my dearest sister. Agnes, in God's name, what have his servants done to you?
Lorenzo carried Agnes, her rotten infant, at her bosom till they reached the sheltering nuns. Virginia de Villafranca made it her business to attend to Agnes, while the sisters made a grave for the hapless infant.
Signor, be sure I will tend your sister whilst you examine whether the coast is clear for our escape. Then I will take her to my home and nurse her back to health for you.
Lorenzo's heart could not have resisted her attractions had it not been steeled by the remembrance of Antonia.
Virginia was satisfied that her attention to Agnes had raised her a degree in Lorenzo's esteem.
He promised to send the archers to protect everyone and determined to search for other victims of inhumanity.
All this while, Ambrosio was unconscious of the dreadful scenes of pillage which were passing so near. And every moment his passion became more ardent, till...
Antonia fainted ere he completed her disgrace. Later, she rose with difficulty and made to quit the dungeon.
Stay. Return this instant.
Have I more to suffer? Oh, let me return to my home.
Oh, what? Wretched woman. You will stay here amidst the images of death and corrupted bodies. Have you not made me a perjured hypocrite, a ravisher, an assassin? You stay. You will not accuse me and cause my eternal anguish. You.
Cease to be a child, Ambrosio.
You, Matilda.
I would not hinder your love, Holy Father, yet the convent is on fire and the abbey is now menaced. The monks seek for you everywhere, reverend sir, that you may calm the disturbance.
At once. I will hasten. At once.
Impossible. Lorenzo de Medina and officers of the Inquisition search through every passage. If they find you with Antonia, you are undone forever. So, I will remove the danger. She shall die.
No! Give me that. No, Matilda. Oh, to God, I've never seen your face. Have done with you.
Absurd. I disclaim you. You do not deserve my protection. Destruction is inevitable.
Help! Help! Over here, my God!
Silence her, fool! Silence her, you are lost. Fight! Away. Follow me.
A torch here.
Who is it?
Here. Who is it?
It is a lady.
She bleeds.
Go ahead, make haste, arrest the slayer.
God Almighty, who can have done this to this lovely creature? No. No, great God, it is Antonia. Oh, my dearest. Dearest, I am Lorenzo. Speak to me. Who has done this?
The monk. Father Ambrosio. Branded me. With shame.
Oh.
Grieve not for me. Dear Lorenzo. I'm deprived of my honor. Oh, I mourn to leave nothing in the whole world
you, Lorenzo. My mother told me. Oh, mother, I come. Oh.
Lorenzo, in agony, threw himself beside the corpse and remained till his force exhausted. He was conveyed to the Palace de Medina, scarcely more alive than the unfortunate Antonia.
Don Ramirez, the head of the archers, interrupted the abbot and his companion in their escape, and found there was no doubt that Ambrosio was Antonia's murderer. The villain was secured and bound. The same precaution was taken with his companion, whose cowl being removed, revealed the delicate features of Matilda. The effects found in their cells were seized and carried to the Inquisition to be produced in evidence at their trial.
In these trials, neither the accusation is mentioned nor the name of the accuser. The prisoners are only asked whether they will confess. If they reply they have no crime, they are put to torture without delay.
Have you a crime?
I have none.
Put the prisoner to the question. Have you a crime?
No! I have none!
Put the prisoner to the question.
In the end, insensibility rescued the monk from the hands of his tormentors, and he was dragged back to his cell to await a second examination.
Terrified by the sight of his sufferings, Matilda sank to her knees.
Have you a crime?
I have corresponded with the infernal spirits.
Have you a further crime?
Sorcery. In this, I am the sole criminal. Ambrosio is perfectly innocent.
There is no credit. You will expiate your crimes in fire before the people. Remove her from the hall of trial.
On the day preceding his second examination, Ambrosio sat unable to speak or move. Despair chained his faculties in idiotism.
Look up, Ambrosio.
You hear, Matilda? Yet the door is locked secure. Where are your chains?
Matilda now wore a female dress blazed with diamonds, and her hair was confined by a coronet of roses.
Have our judges relented? Is there a chance of my escaping?
I have baffled the Inquisitor's fury. I am free.
Matilda, what price for your liberty?
My soul, Ambrosio.
Oh, wretched woman, past but a few years, and how dreadful will be your sufferings.
How dreadful will be your own, weak man. Do you still dare to hope for pardon? Think upon your crimes. Then dream of heaven. Absurd. Open your eyes, Ambrosio. Hell is your lot. Yet why plunge into those flames? You still have power to shun them. Enjoy the present and forget a future lags behind.
God is merciful.
Ambrosio, I have no more to say.
No, Matilda, stay. Release me. Force open these prison doors. You still command the infernal demons.
You ask the only boon beyond my power to bestow. I am forbidden to assist a churchman and partisan of God. However, should you repent and sigh for escape when I am gone, I leave you with this book. Read the first four lines of the seventh page backwards, and the spirit whom you have already once beheld will immediately appear to you. If you are wise, we shall meet again. If not, farewell, Ambrosio. Forever.
Ambrosio threw himself into his seat and sank into reflections perplexing and unconnected till he was summoned to appear before the Grand Inquisitor again.
Do you, Ambrosio, recognize your examiner?
I do.
Do you, Ambrosio, see the engines of torture?
I do.
Do you, Ambrosio, remember the pangs they have already inflicted?
I do.
Do you, Ambrosio, acknowledge your crimes?
I acknowledge none.
Do you see the engines of torture?
I do.
Do you now remember the pangs they have already inflicted?
I do.
Do you now acknowledge your crime?
I acknowledge none.
Do you see the engines of torture?
I do.
Do you acknowledge the pangs they will inflict if you do not confess?
I do.
Then do you now acknowledge the crimes with which you have been charged?
I do. Acknowledge.
Do you know the terrible consequences?
Stop. Stop. I am guilty.
You are guilty. Will you now make ample confession and disclose every circumstance of your guilt?
Anxious to escape the terrors of the present moment, the monk declared himself to be whatever title the inquisitors chose to fix upon him.
And so, in consequence of your avowal, you are ordered to prepare yourself to perish in flames before the people at midnight. Take him away.
Rather dead than alive, Ambrosio was left alone in his dungeon. In a moment of despair, his eye rested on the mysterious book which Matilda had left him.
Why? We shall meet again.
Lines of the seventh page. Backwards.
What am I summoned hither?
I'm condemned to die. Bear me away. Be my servant for 1 hour, and I will be yours for 1,000 years.
Short-sighted mortal, infamous in the eyes of men and angels.
I have this day confessed my crimes.
All? All? I think not so.
Hypocrite, inhuman parasite. Incestuous ravisher, what madness in these words.
Is it not madness when I tell you, inhuman parasite, incestuous ravisher, that Elvira was your mother? Forced to fly from the wrath of her father-in-law, she abandoned you to the monastery. Antonia, whom you desired and seduced, was your sister, Ambrosio, your sister.
The moment I beheld you in the cathedral, I felt so pleased, so interested. It seemed as if I had known you long and had the right to your friendship.
But sign this parchment that your soul belongs to me, and I will bear you hence.
Never. One day I may be pardoned. My crimes are monstrous, but when they have received due chastisement...
There. My pen is filled with your blood. Come, sign.
I will not. Leave me.
Weak and puerile. Sign this instant, or I sacrifice you to my rage.
Oh, it strikes.
They come.
And if I sign my soul to you, whatever, what am I to receive in exchange?
My protection and release from this dungeon when you complete the contract.
Fate urges me. I accept your conditions.
Then, do you, Ambrosio, freely renounce your creator and his son?
I do.
Do you then make your soul to me forever?
Forever.
Without reserve or subterfuge? Without future appeal to divine mercy?
I am yours forever, and irrevocably I abandon all claim to salvation. I have no power but yours.
They come. They come.
Sign the pen. There, 'tis done.
You are mine past reprieve, and I fulfill my promise.
Heaven, save me!
Save me! Instantly the demon spread his broad pinions and sprang with Ambrosio into the air. The roof opened, and they soared aloft. The infernal guide traversed the air with the rapidity of an arrow, and in a few moments he placed Ambrosio on the brink of a precipice.
Why have you brought me here? Carry me to Matilda!
This mortal who placed his puny virtues on a level with those of angels is mine. Carry you to Matilda? Yes, wretch. You shall soon be with her. Foolish man, who thought to be virtuous through vanity, not principle. You leave not these mountains alive.
A contract. Perfidious. Have you forgotten our contract?
Contract? You are out of prison. What more did I promise? Fool that you were, to confide yourself to a devil. Why did you not stipulate for life, power and pleasure, Ambrosio? Hmm? Then all would have been granted. I fear your reflections come too late, Ambrosio, so prepare for death. You have not many hours to live.
Ah, mercy. Mercy. Have mercy on me.
You wretch!
You dare! You dare to raise your hand to heaven! Rise!
Thus do I secure my prey. Darting his talons into the monk's shaven crown, he sprang with him aloft till, reaching a dreadful height, he released his burden.
The monk fell headlong through the airy waste till the sharp point of a rock received him. Bruised and battered, he attempted in vain to raise himself. On the second day, his broken limbs refused to perform their office, nor was he able to quit the spot. On the third day, the sun rose, its scorching beams full upon the head of the expiring sinner. Myriads of insects fastened upon his sores and inflicted on him tortures the most exquisite and insupportable. On the fourth day, eagles tore his flesh piecemeal and dug out his eyeballs with their crooked beaks. On the fifth day, a burning thirst tormented him. He heard a stream chatter as it flushed beside him, but strove in vain to drag himself toward the sound. On the sixth miserable day, the villain did still languish, venting his rage in blasphemy and curses. On the seventh day, the winds of fury rent up rocks and forests. Torrents swelled the stream till waves overflowed its banks, and reached the spot where Ambrosio lay, carrying with them into the river the corpse of the despairing monk.
Incidental to what you have just heard, if can be said that the remaining years of Raymond and Agnes, of Lorenzo and Virginia, were as happy as can be those allotted to mortals born to the prey of grief and sport of disappointment. Having weathered fate's heaviest storms, they looked calmly upon its terrors. Or if ever they felt affliction's casual gales, they seemed to them gentle as zephyrs which breathe over summer seas.
The Monk was played by Michael Pennington and the Demon by Alan McLennan. Rosario and Matilda were played by Sorica Cusack. Agnes by Jenny Funnell. Antonia by Emily Morgan. Lorenzo by Christopher Douglas. And Cristobal by Brian Smith.